You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm George Prentice in for Gemma Gaudette. Over the last few months, organizations, some businesses and universities have released statements in support of Black Lives. But specifically at universities that are predominantly white, a growing number of people say they're disappointed by the lack of tangible change to policy and or programs. Dr. Sidney Freeman is a professor at the University of Idaho. He recently published an article in the journal Diverse Issues in Higher Education, and the article is titled 10 Concrete Policy Changes Predominantly White Institutions Can Enact to Show That Black Lives Matter. We welcome Professor Freeman to Idaho Matters. Dr. Freeman, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, sir. For the record, I guess we should state the obvious. The University of Idaho and Boise State University would be considered predominantly white, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk about how predominantly white institutions have, well, avoided addressing systemic racism for hundreds of years?
Yes. Yeah, so there's been a fraught relationship between African Americans and predominantly white institutions. So you can go back to colonial times where it's been recorded by scholars such as Craig Wilder in the book Ebony and Ivory, where college presidents were considered what they would call slave masters. Harvard students, you know, there's examples of them forcing enslaved Black men to be intoxicated almost to death. There's examples at Williams College where a Black man was forced to smash his head into wooden boards and barrels. And at some colleges and universities, there were Black enslaved children that were shot at by students as a way to satisfy their boredom. And so there's been this kind of fraught relationship over time. And even now, there's a whole discussion about the exploitation of student athletes, Black student athletes, mm-hmm. where they were at institutions. Many of their students are coming through their institution through athletic scholarships, but not enough is provided with regards to academic scholarships for these students.
Indeed. I'm thinking back to a book came out about 10 years ago called The New Plantation, about Black athletes, and basically how NCAA Division I institutions are utilizing an internal, well, a colonial model. And indeed, number one on your list is to pay Black athletes. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I'm not a scholar of Black athletics. There are those who study that in depth, but I just think based on the conversations going on with the NCAA and colleges and universities across this country, you're having at some of the SEC schools, some of the bigger schools, you're having coaches making millions of dollars and students not graduating and may not get into professional sports, but also not coming out with a degree or any money. And so there's a lot of these major contracts that are going to these sports channels,
right.
and so it's really important to be equitable and fair in this process. And so I don't see them as amateurs. I think a lot of us are seeing now that there's so much money that is being passed around, and the students should be able to actually get some of those resources.
And indeed, the argument is that these universities have given far greater priority to, well, exploiting the bodies of Black athletes than to developing their minds.
Exactly.
Your second point, establish and fund Black cultural centers. And this would offer support to all Black members of the campus community. Can you talk about that particular need?
Yeah, so I believe that UCLA is doing, has has put together a outline of things that they are planning to do to support their students, faculty, and staff. And a center is really important. It's important because a lot of times Black people on these campuses are, let's say if you're a student, you may be one or two of the students in a class. And a lot of times there is not the kind of cultural support that you need to be successful. But by providing a cultural center, it is a center that supports you. You have a director and other individuals that put on programming to support students, but also faculty and staff. They get to interact with those that look like them, and it makes an environment where people don't feel as if they are alone.
We're talking with Dr. Sidney Freeman, professor at University of Idaho. Dr. Freeman, does the U of I have a Black Studies program?
We have what we call an Africana Studies program, and I am one of the faculty in that program. We established that maybe about 4 years ago. And one of the interesting things that are on our campus is that we previously had a Black student union on campus, actual physical space on campus for Black students. Over time, that went away, but there is a reemergence and a push for a space such as we've had in the past to support our students, faculty, and staff.
Is that reemergence coming from students, alumni? Where's it coming from?
It's coming from students. I've been working on a project for the last 3 years, essentially looking at the contributions of Blacks at the University of Idaho. And it came out of me coming here about 6 years ago and wondering where I kind of fit within the history of the university. Within my college, I am the only African American. We have a gentleman who is Caribbean, is from the Caribbean. However, I'm the only African-American that descended of slaves. And so I wanted to kind of figure out, you know, how many tenured black professors are there at the institution? And right now I am the only African-American tenured faculty member on the main campus here in Moscow. In Boise, there is another tenured faculty member in the College of Law.
Well, let's speak bluntly. What does that say about recruitment at these universities?
Well, I find that there can be a sense that we're Idaho and Black people won't come to Idaho. But there's not a lot of dialogue with the faculty and staff that are here about why we are here and why we stay. And so a part of my work in doing that project was to kind of get a sense of what were experiences of Black students, faculty, and staff, and why they chose to stay and why they chose to leave. And it's been very interesting because we've also had students engage in the project to actually interview some of the alumni and those who have left the institution.
Black people won't come to Idaho. Isn't that argument at least 50 years too old?
I think so. I think that if you have conversations with faculty and staff, there are some very strategic things that we can do. However, you have to want to do it. Mary Beth Gassman, a professor at at Rutgers University in New Jersey, wrote a op-ed maybe about 3 years ago where she said that we don't have Black faculty at predominantly white institutions because we don't want to. And so there is not a strategic plan that says that we want to hire more black faculty. We want more Black staff. And do we want more Black students? And so I think it's really important for us to think strategically about targeting how we can be more inclusive, particularly particularly related to the Black population on our campuses.
Dr. Freeman, you brought up UCLA. A couple of weeks ago, UCLA came out with a statement about where exactly they're reallocating some funding and how specifically they'll be changing policy to support Black lives. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what that is?
Yes, so I think that they are a great example of how to address some of these issues comprehensively. So one of the first things that they provide is that they will appoint a special faculty advisor within the president's cabinet so that that person can be a liaison regarding supporting the Black population on campus. They also talk about providing more support to a Black Student Resource Center, which is similar to what I am suggesting all predominantly white institutions should be considering. They are also looking at ways in which to provide more mental health professionals to support specifically Black students, given some of the challenges that we're finding related to some of the things that were happening with the Black Lives Matter movement. It was really traumatizing for Black students to not only deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, but some people would also say that there was a pandemic related to racism as it related to George Floyd and others being treated negatively by police officers. And so there is money, specific dollars, $250,000 that has been allocated towards providing seed research grants for research on Black issues, which is really important because we can make assumptions, but because we're research institutions, it's really important to ensure that there are dollars placed to do additional research to support these populations. So this is just a few things that they have laid out.
But these UCLA was founded over a century ago, and there have been decades of calls for change. What is it in 2020? Was it the murder of George Floyd? Was that the sea change?
I think it was, but you connect that with being in a pandemic where people, you know, they watch the news, but they're able to they're doing other things and they can kind of say, you know, I have other things on my plate. What's happened now is everybody was watching the news. Everybody was feeling tense because they're not knowing what's going to happen with regard to this pandemic. And then to see, for everyone to kind of visually see this type of negative interaction with the police, I would say murder that was committed by the police, it was striking. One of the things that I heard a conservative say several years ago is, and she asked this question, she said, are we comfortable with Blacks being a perpetual underclass? And I think that's truly important, even on our campuses. If we look at the population, the Black population in our country, we're only 15% of the overall population. And when I think about it, I'm thinking, well, it actually would not take that much to make things better for a small population like 15%. People need to have the will to make that happen. And I think universities are uniquely positioned to do that.
We're talking with Dr. Sidney Freeman, professor at the University of Idaho. Dr. Freeman, I've got just a couple of minutes, but let's bring this home. Let's talk about the University of Idaho and Boise State. First of all, the U of I. What are your hopes for the coming weeks, the months, maybe the next year?
I am hoping that our leaders implement, if not some, all, well, I would hope all of these recommendations that I've laid out in my paper. I also think it's going to be really important for us to shift the language from just saying people of color and these broad, we use broad terms, and look at specific racial and ethnic groups. So for instance, the relationship between Blacks and the state of Idaho is different than Native Americans and Idaho and our Latinx community, our Hispanic community and Idaho. So being very thoughtful about, yes, we are all a part of this broader group that we're calling people of color or minorities, but each of our groups have a different relationship with the institution and the state and has specific needs. And so there needs to be conversations with those communities to address their needs. But I believe that the 10 recommendations I provide are very specific and concrete and actually could be doable and implementable without an act of Congress pulling all faculty together. These are things I try to provide that are things that leaders can do fairly easily given their leadership roles.
Boise State Public Radio is part of Boise State University. What should we and other university employees, what can we do to support our institutions to move in the right direction? We understand what the expectations are of the institutions. What can we do?
One, educate yourself about the needs of minoritized faculty. And what I mean by that, there's over 100 years worth of scholarship around the experiences of Black faculty and staff and students as it relates to predominantly white institutions. And so actually doing your own research, not just expecting the faculty of color to educate you. And then once you're educated, speak out. One of the things that I was able to do within my own program was I was able to engage the faculty in my program after reading an article or two related to the history of Blacks at predominantly white institutions. And that allowed us to engage in a very thoughtful conversation and even charge my white colleagues to use what we call privilege to support the issues that impact our diverse faculty, staff, and students.
Let's talk about hope. Are you hopeful that this time of activism will be different?
I'm hopefully pessimistic. I think that history has shown that people just want to get back to what makes them comfortable. And so for Black people, we're always uncomfortable in this country, right? And it is on the backs of our uncomfortability that white people are comfortable, right? And so we have to have that conversation about what the ways in which our white colleagues can navigate being uncomfortable, because as a black man in Idaho, I'm often uncomfortable given that I'm, you know, one of very few. I've learned how to navigate that. However, I think our white colleagues have to learn how to navigate that too, until we get to a space where things are equitable and fair.
I've got just a few seconds left. I guess the most impressive part of this article is that these goals are, well, in your word, actionable. And indeed, there are no excuses here for not knowing where to start and how to start. Yes?
Yes. I would agree with that. That was in response to all of these letters that were going out by by presidents and leaders about supporting Black Lives Matter. However, we did not see, here are the thing, concrete things that we're doing to support you. And so I've heard from around the country some positive things about using the article as a template, as a jumping off point, as thinking about ways in which to support Black populations on various campuses across the country.
I've got one more question. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about a new semester under a shadow of a pandemic. What's your level of optimism there?
So I actually teach 100% online, but I am in support of my colleagues who are teaching both face-to-face and online, a high flex model or a hybrid model. I am supportive of them having choice. Many of our faculty are, they may have immune deficiency issues and things like that, and they should not be put in a position where they have to teach. They have to teach or operate in a way that will compromise them and their health.
He is Dr. Sidney Freeman, professor at the University of Idaho, and his article is titled 10 Concrete Policy Changes Predominantly White Institutions Can Enact to Show Black Lives Matter. Dr. Freeman, all the best to you, and thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Curtis Stigers in word and song. I'm George Prentice, and you're listening to Idaho Matters.